afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's all kinds of crazy things going on. And yesterday, my apologies to the listeners, I had to leave a little early. I'm still in Maryland, though. I didn't take the shortcut to Kansas, but I take those warnings of tornadoes, as I think everyone should, seriously. And I have a business. I have to make sure that everything is secure just in case something should happen. And basically, it was right over the top of Berlin yesterday as at 5 o'clock. As it was getting closer to the water, to the ocean, the tornado cell sort of died down. So it was, some places it was windy and some places it wasn't. But there was a tornado that did touch down in Salisbury, which is about 20 miles west of me. So and it always makes for an interesting day. And so always take those warnings seriously, folks. I know many of we don't. I tell you to, but sometimes I just sit there and say, yeah. You know, the weather guy's wrong 9 times out of 10. And sometimes even 10 times out of 10. But it's when you ignore it, that's that one time that you should be prepared for. Gold today is not prepared. I just can't believe it. It's like President Trump and North Korea is taunting one another, and gold was up significantly this morning. Then it went down. We had a high of 12, basically 1265, a low of 1251. They're taunting each other about, you know, who's got the biggest bomb and who can do it the fastest. And we got a rise out of gold, 360. 360 for gold today, up at $1,262. Silver's up 19 cents today at $16.55. Platinum was up $4,975. Palladium was up $12,898. The USDX today was stronger, which I expected with the war news coming out, 93.63. up 0.21, and crude oil was down 0.27 at 49.12. And the paper markets today, just a little pressure. You have the Dow was down 46 points, 22,071. The S&P was down 8 at 24.72, and NASDAQ was down 18 at 63.65. Let me get back to my screen. The 10-year yield was a little bit stronger, up 3 basis points at 2.28%. A lot of pressure on the euro, 117. It was 119 just not that long ago, down 0.48. And as I mentioned, you know, the headlines is North Korea is saying, hey, let's get physical. And Trump vows fire and fury.
That's so, part of the art of being a good commander in chief. You've got to come up with catchy titles for your invasions and your fire and fury. We had shock and awe. I think was that's where Bush set the line, and now Trump is kind of hopping over it with fire and fury.
Well, North Korea has successfully created a miniaturized nuclear weapon that can fit in its missiles, according to NBC and the Washington Post. And President Trump warned North Korea about facing fire and fury like the world has never seen before. North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States, Mr. Trump told reporters, speaking slowly and deliberately with his arms crossed in front of him. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening, and as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Trump made the remarks while getting briefed on the U.S. opioid epidemic. I can't understand why that is so much in the news of late, but I think I got that one figured out. We'll see. but he's what he calls a working vacation at his New Jersey golf club. So Pyongyang has successfully created a miniaturized nuclear weapon. So we don't know what mini is.
Well, I don't know what to say about any of it other than it seems it's going to be a difficult situation to avoid having some sort of a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. And it's just pretty much a question of who's going to move first on this, who's going to strike first. And I'm sure there are people that are telling Trump, you got to go, you got to go, you got to go. Other people are telling him, you got to wait. I don't know. What's going to happen? Now, you would think that the man running North Korea would have brains enough to pull in his horns and say, okay, let's cut a deal on this thing.
The only reason that I believe that he isn't, well, we know he must have some sort of a backup plan. Somebody like someone is standing behind him.
I think his only backup plan is cosmetic surgery and moving to the Mediterranean.
I'm serious, Al. Whether it be China, whether it could be Iran. He has to have some sort of a bow-out plan. Somebody that's backing him, someone that's pushing him, saying that if the U.S. strikes you, we'll do this, or we'll, you know, prevent this from happening, or whatever. There is something a little bit deeper than just him being a nutcase.
I don't think so. You may be right, but I don't think so. I think if there was anyone backing him up, I think we'd hear about it by now.
Oh.
He would say, if anything happens here, Iran is going to counterstrike. If anything happens here, this whole thing is a war of
words. We know the relationships with Iran is getting stronger. We know he's reached out to Iran. Our relationships with
China
Iran is not all
them,
that good.
Kind of against them. China's not.
China doesn't want any. Well, that remains to be seen. But on the other hand, you don't know. You don't know about Russia.
Don't know about any of them.
You don't know about any of them.
All of them are talking, and what do they mean?
So,
it's very nice that they talk, but what do they really mean?
I don't think he's puffing up his chest all alone. So,
well, he's puffing up his belly all alone.
We have the National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, recently said Trump is not going to tolerate North Korea being able to threaten the United States. And you know what's scary about this is I saw a recent poll. The majority of Americans want Trump to strike first.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, they want him. And it's a little surprising because they felt the same way about Iran. And it's not something that I want to see happen.
Well, with Iran, it was something where we were arguing, and even Saddam Hussein, he argued that he had weapons of mass destruction. And we argued he had weapons of mass destruction, yellow cake, uranium, and I don't know what all they are. And it was all nonsense. He didn't have it. I mean, the big search after we did invade was find the weapons of mass destruction. They never found any.
No.
Saddam Hussein was just BSing. And there's a good chance that's what Kim Il-sung is also doing. He's just BSing. All right, maybe he's got some missiles, he's got some nuclear weapons, but in the end he's inflating. He's like dealing with a chihuahua that is extremely angry little chihuahua, and he's threatening to slash your throat. No, you have trouble biting my little finger, bug.
Ever remember Iraq saying they had weapons of mass destruction. They were saying we
didn't. Saddam Hussein did.
He was saying we don't have them. That's why he allowed all those inspectors to go in there.
They were saying them originally. He was claiming to have them. And I'm just saying that's the parallel that to some degree we're talking about the American public saying, let's bomb this guy before he bombs us. It was because the American public heard reports Saddam Hussein said he had weapons of mass destruction.
But he also eliminated them, too. We still went in there and to do the inspections, and while he was professing that he had eliminated them, we continued to say that he had them.
Well, I understand. So the lesson in all of this is if you're going to keep any nuclear bombs around the house, probably it's not a good idea to brag about it. All right? It's not even a good idea to claim you have nuclear weapons when you don't. it's a dangerous claim. So that's a little helpful tip, everybody in the audience. If you got any nuclear weapons, shut up. Don't tell anybody about it or you're going to get taken out.
Well, I don't think it's just that the U.S. is going to go there and wipe them off the face of the earth.
No, I don't think so either. I think they're trying to just get the weapons and get the military.
And if they do that, I don't think people are going to like what's going to happen afterwards.
No, I think the U.S.
is a serious situation.
The U.S. will be tasked with making strategic precision strikes on North Korea's military capacity and their capacity to make nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles. They're not going to bomb. They're not going to bomb their main cities. They're not going to try to kill a bunch of civilians. They are going to try to take the legs of power from out from under Kim.
And you know what? If they miss, you better hope he's lying.
Well, what do you mean?
If they miss their main target, they better hope he's lying that he has a nuclear weapon.
Oh, he has nuclear weapons. I don't doubt that he's detonated some in the past. Whether he's got one small enough to fit on an ICBM is debatable.
Supposedly,
he claims he does.
That
I don't
he
know.
Does. I know. But
this is a dangerous, dangerous game of chicken. All right, especially this is like a Volkswagen playing chicken with a tank. And Kim is operating the Volkswagen. This is a dangerous game of chicken, and the tank is not likely to chicken out. That means.
But what we don't know is if he has any tanks standing behind that Volkswagen. That we don't know.
No, he's got some tricks up his sleeve and the rest of that sort of thing. I don't doubt that. There's going to be a problem with this thing. The question is, how do you make a precision strike on this and put him out before anybody even knows what's going on? Can that be done? If it can, I don't doubt they're going to try to do it, or at least I assume they'll try to do it. But there's apparently some question about this because North Korea is such a mountainous place that you can detonate enormous bombs in one valley that you won't hardly hear them in the next valley because there's mountains between the two valleys that are not easily overcome. And the point is, you don't know exactly where everything's hidden. You don't know exactly what everything is that you might want to attack, or at least maybe you don't. So it's all, I don't know what to make of any of it, but Kim is certainly aggravating the situation. And you know, one of the things that may happen before this is done, there may be some people in North Korea who finally say, look, somebody's got to shut this guy up. It may be that he's going to be assassinated. And I guarantee that if he was assassinated, the government of the United States would be flooding him with extra money and dollars and one thing and another like that. If anybody takes Kim out, it was North Korea. I think the North Korean people would have cause before it was done to say, hey, then this is not so bad. Maybe we can, you know, get into the kind of prosperity that we see in South Korea. But who can say?
I don't know.
It's just crazy. That's the thing that's annoying about this. This doesn't have to happen. All right? I don't know if any war has to happen, but this one doesn't have to happen except we've got one or more lunatics on site who cannot let things go. They've got to have their... They've got to stand up and puff out their chest, and they're going to get a bunch of people killed if we're not careful. Not necessary. This isn't necessary. But it seems like the lunatics are bound and determined to make it happen.
Well, yeah. Sure, we cover up a lot, and I don't know what would happen to the markets and so forth. Oh. But the markets, hey, they don't seem to really take anything very seriously. Huh? So the markets aren't believing that something's going to happen.
Like we were talking yesterday, we had the one article where they're pointing out that the computers now dominate the markets. So
yes, I get that, Al. But when people panic, there's going to be a ton of selling going on, and the computers are going to be overridden by sellers. So you know,
we'll watch and see.
That's the dangerous part. That's the dangerous part because you don't know, you know, how many of those flash crashes it'll instigate. So, but yeah, when there's panic and people begin selling, yeah, computers, yeah. The thing is, it'll be going down. They might be able to hold it up at this level for now, but when there's sellers and there's panic, you know. What's other interesting, I don't know your thoughts on this, but there's also a proposal that supposedly, it's real news, President Trump is weighing to send 5,500 private security contractors and a private air force of 90 planes to Afghanistan in order to turn the tide of the nearly 16-year-old war. This is according to the USA Today. Eric Prince, a former Navy SEAL and founder of the Blackwater security firm, has been pushing a privatization of U.S. forces in the country amid a stalemate with the Taliban, and told the newspaper that the White House is now actively considering it. Prince, there's always connections. Follow the money. There's always connections. Prince is the brother of Betsy DeVos, who is Trump's education secretary. Anyway, the private contractors would be mostly former U.S. special operators and would help advise Afghan security forces. Both Defense Secretary Mattis and McMaster, the president's national security advisor, have apparently voiced doubts about the privatization proposal, but Chief White House strategist Steve Bannon is entertaining the idea, and that was reported. You know, back in 2007, during the Iraqi invasion, there was a lot of mercenaries. Blackwater was created, and it was not a good thing. Is it a good thing now?
Is no, I don't agree with this at all. Yeah. The idea that the United States government is going to hire some mercenaries to win a war for us is just
insane.
Is embarrassing. It's humiliating. You're telling me that the United States military can't kick Afghanistan's butt. All right? Now, this isn't necessarily a surprise because it's not the first time an emperor has fallen on its sword trying to invade Afghanistan.
Russia.
It happened to Russia. It happened to... I can't even think of this...
They are sending more troops.
We're world conqueror at one point in time. Afghanistan is a tough little nut, right? For reasons that aren't exactly clear, except the people you're fighting over there. It's all I do is fight. It's all I want to do is fight. I mean, this is a blessing for these people. Hey, we get to fight and kill some people. You know, it's a bizarre situation. But if the United States, it is an admission that the United States military can't handle Afghanistan. And I'll make you a bet that if we have to send private contractors in there, it will not only be an international humiliation. I'll make you a bet that before this is done, the private contractors, they get their butts kicked by the Afghans too. I mean, just because we're sending in, how many soldiers are we talking about?
Well, they didn't say. We currently have 8,400 there, and I saw today where they were sending more over. But this is an idea that is floating around the White House, and Trump is considering it.
I think it's a bad idea, but we've got to take some commercials, and we'll talk more in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Get it while you can, folks. I'm going to continue running the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty gold piece. There's been a strong appetite for these coins, and as there should be, they're still selling. Actually, they're not selling below the 20, but they're selling at the 20. So I'm not quite sure when they're going to pop above there, but now is the buying opportunity to get that fractional $10 Liberty gold piece, Mint State 62, at about $5 to $10 more than what you would pay for a gold bullion eagle for a 1 ounce if you purchase two of the $10 Liberty coins. So it's still a tremendous buy. Price is fluctuating. I lowered it this morning at $6.75 when we saw the price drop a little bit in gold, and it popped back up to 680 with this last move in gold here at the end of the day. So $680 for a Mint State 62 $10 gold piece. 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Make sure you get to the website. Make sure you get to the website. Oh, my German's coming out. Part of my German, anyway. Get to my website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. So were we finished with the private contractors, the wars?
Terrible idea. Just really a terrible idea, in my opinion. I mean, what you're talking about is, I don't remember which book wrote on the subject, and even novels and movies and the rest of that, but this idea of private military, this is just so dangerous.
Well,
and it'll push us in directions. I mean, corporate warfare, wars between corporations rather than nations before this is done.
And what about hiring these private armies to turn on the citizens of a country, not just corporate?
I understand. They're not they don't even profess to have some obligation to defend the people. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily, the way the world is going, I'm not sure who's on whose side anymore, killers, they're not on my side.
Would he have to get approval through Congress?
I don't know.
If it's because of the security of this country, he can do anything.
Well, it's overseas. I mean, he can't. What we're talking about is when we say, will Trump approve this, we're actually talking about, will Trump support it? Will he pay these guys to go there? They're private individuals. In theory, they have as much right to go to Afghanistan as I do. There may be some visa restraint on American citizens going in Afghanistan. I don't know if that's true or false. It's probably true. Trump could say, okay, we're going to give you visas. You can enter Afghanistan while you're there. You know, play a little golf, a little tennis, go swimming, enjoy yourself. And if you get a chance, shoot a few people. I don't know what Trump is going to do, but I think the permission is not simply, okay, you guys go fight. The permission is, you guys go there and we will pay you a substantial amount of money to fight. We'll take it out of our coffers, and instead of sending our own military over there or only our own military, we'll pay you guys. Whole thing is dangerous, 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 but you made a good point, an interesting point, when you wondered if our current focus with opioids has anything to do with Afghanistan, because Afghanistan is a primary source of opium for much of the world. And
you know what's interesting now is, prior to us going in there, their poppy fields were basically non-existent. I mean, they had them down to a level because they were trying to drop it, and they were cutting them down. But when we went to war and when we went to Afghanistan, we started having, they started having record crops. So we were in there to protect those crops. And
poppy fields.
Poppy fields.
Right. Well, we are allegedly trying to stop an epidemic of opioids.
It's too much money to stop
it. Or at least heroin and the rest of that sort of thing, opium and heroin back in the day. The poppy fields, and I've heard the reports. I've never been to Afghanistan. Don't know what the truth of the matter is, but I've heard reports, and probably so has the audience over the course of the last 10, 15 years, that we are, that from soldiers who claimed that the poppy fields were off limits. Couldn't cut them, couldn't burn them, you know. They had to be protected by our government's edict. We were out there to protect the poppy fields. You only have a war, fine, have a war, but don't damage the poppies. Want to kill that guy over there wearing that funny hat? Kill him. That's okay, but don't damage the poppies. Big money in the poppies. I don't know how much of that is true, but it's a story that's been persistent. You know, what do they say, 13 years we've been there in Afghanistan?
I remember very clearly the reports coming out that their crops were basically gone. I mean, they were working.
Well, the Taliban.
The Taliban
are serious about their faith, and they don't put up with this stuff.
No. Nope.
They had the Taliban, the alleged
enemy. The
poppy
fields were almost eradicated. It was almost eradicated. Yeah. And they didn't say that the troops went in there to officially, you know, protect them. But shortly after we went in there, they started having, once again, record crops. So put two and two together, folks.
You have to ask yourself, what the heck are we doing engaged in some kind of a war that's gone on for 13 years?
You don't even know what it's about anymore.
Come on. If we got a war, it should be wham, bam, we're done with it. You know, we get in, we get out, it should be done. We don't do that. We do a little police action. We go in there and shoot a few people. They shoot at us, blah, blah, blah. There has to be a reason why this war has lingered for 13 years. What is that? It's either that we can't defeat the Afghans, they're too tough for us, which I find hard to believe, or we won't defeat them because something's going on over there that we want to protect. I've heard some people say, I think it was Brzezinski in one of his books, he was arguing that Afghanistan was the key piece in the global geopolitical struggle. And anyone, if you can control Afghanistan, you control the trade routes from China to the Middle East, and this, I don't remember all of his rationale, but he wasn't kidding. He thought that this peculiar pile of rocks, right, was the key. Right? If you could control that, you could rule the world. Well, apparently people have, I mean, the Russians perhaps believed it. They tried to take over Afghanistan. They lost their butts. We've been at it for 13 years. I think we could 16. Win, but we choose not to. Why not? What is really going on? And I don't expect to find out anytime soon, but you have to ask yourself, there has to be an ulterior motive to drag a war out for 13 years.
I was 16 now.
You were 16?
I think so.
You were 16 or the war is 16?
The war is 16.
Oh, I thought you meant you were 16 when the war started. I was thinking, this thing's gone on for more than
13
years.
Only Bob Chapman would say that because he always said I was 29. So that was anyway, Fannie and Freddie. Remember them? Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac?
Yep.
Well, guess what? They might need $99 billion from taxpayers if a severe economic downturn gripped the U.S. So the Federal Housing Finance Agency released the results of a stress test that examined how the mortgage finance companies would perform in what's called a severely adverse scenario. That severely adverse scenario, folks, is not that far away. What cracks me up is this can't be the first stress test that Fannie and Freddie was issued or was required to perform and failed. So now they have it up to $99.6 billion. So they're just warning you taxpayers that, hey, we might have to bail them out. The stress test was mandated, of course, by the Dodd-Frank Act. And the tests found that Fannie and Freddie together would require between $34 and $99 billion. Now, that's a pretty big gap, and that's an improvement from last year, really? So, again, it's...
What do you think the chances are that's all they'll need?
No.
Is that how much they'll need altogether? That's it, $99 billion, that's it. We won't ask for another dime. Or is this the camel getting its nose into the tent, and if you give them $98 billion, it'll be back for another $98 billion, and then another $98 after that?
Well, supposedly last year, for the stress test, it was $125 billion. So supposedly they dropped it now to $99. But I figured with a little bit of fuzzy math and some new calculations that they teach you at school, they were able to come up with $99. I would expect it would be $125 billion if that's what they were last year. What has really changed in a year?
So. Well, give us some money. No matter how much it is, it won't be enough. But just get in the habit of giving us some money, and then we'll get some more.
But these stress tests, I mean, even the big banks, you know, if they fail the stress test, they just go in and jigger what they need to jigger, so they pass it. You know, they move a little bit of here, move a little bit of money there, and make it work so they pass. Europe does it with all their stress tests. Our banks do it with their stress tests. So, and they just fool the American people, say, yeah, all right, these banks are solid. They have enough reserves to, you know, should we have? We're not anticipating, but should we have? I mean, if these are not telling people, wake up.
Yeah, I understand the end is near. It's a little bit like the national debt. What does the national debt prove? It proves that we can't pay our bills. You know, it would be one thing if we had a little of a rough patch. We went into debt a little bit. We ran up the bill a trillion or 2 trillion or 5 trillion. Yeah. Okay, we've ran it up, but now things are back on the rails. We're paying off the debt. We're getting back. No, we're $20 trillion in debt.
Plus,
it's more than we will ever repay in full. Right? What does that prove? It proves that we are technically bankrupt. Right? If I have so much debt that I've got a dozen people that I owe money to, and if I have an enormous sum of debt and I can only pay off six of them, what's it mean? It means I'm bankrupt. What is the reason for the debt except for the fact that we can't pay our bills? There's the problem. And it's, you know, you look at this and everybody's, again, this is the emperor. This is that story about the emperor who's walking around in the nude. Everybody's, oh, what a magnificent, you know, cloak you're wearing and, you know, all the rest. No, he's butt naked. And this is the same thing right now. The national debt is proof of this. It's not a temporary debt. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it can't be paid. No one who looks at it says, oh, we'll be able to pay that. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it. No, you won't. You'll be lucky to pay half of it, and that's lucky. And more than likely, you'll see 80 to 90% of it just finally, in one way or another, it will be repudiated, which means we're bankrupt. Oh, now what? You know, it's the sort of thing, it's for a lot of people, they hear statement that the government is, that this is evidence that the government is bankrupt, and they say, well, that's ridiculous. No, it's not. Technically, it's correct. Government's bankrupt. Now what? How long can it continue to function in its current bankrupt condition? You know, I mean, how long could you function if you were legally bankrupt? How long could I? There's a limit on this. I know that the government operates on a different time schedule than you and I do. You and I, if we were bankrupt, we might be forced to abandon, you know, any pretense of solvency and get dragged into a bankruptcy court within months. Government might be able to survive for years, decades even, I don't know. But it's bankrupt. Yeah. Look at the national debt.
You know, it's funny. I was reading an article where it talks about the debt ceiling, and you know, yeah, Mnuchin saying it needs to be done with the, you know, with nothing attached to it. It needs a clean bill to get passed, and then you have, you know, this other guy, Mick Mulvaney, the DOM director of Office Management and Budget. You know, he's saying, well, you know, we can do this, you know, and, but he's a founding member of the Freedom Caucus, which shouldn't have anything to do with it. And then the article goes on and talks about, well, what if the Treasury does hit the debt ceiling? It only has two realistic responses. Treasury can pay the government's bill on a first-in, first-out basis with the wait for payment growing every month, or it can prioritize bills, as Mr. Mulvaney and others have suggested. No matter whether you pay on a first-in, first-out, or prioritize, it's still default. They just kind of make it a nicer, gentler, kinder way of saying, folks, we're defaulting on our debt. So it's just like, you know, they restructure. Now they're going to prioritize. It's defaulting.
All
no matter
sounds,
how you can look at it.
It all sounds very sophisticated and controlled when we use the big words. But the reality is they're broke.
They're broke.
That's what's going on. The government's busted. And how do they get out from under this debt? There's only two ways to get out of the debt that I'm able to think of at this moment. And one of them is you just flat out repudiate the debt and say, sorry, boys, we can't pay. You just lost your assets. All right. Got a nice piece of paper you can hang on the wall, but you're never going to get anything back in return for it. You can repudiate the debt openly, or you can go into hyperinflation, which will repudiate the debt by making each dollar worth less. You'll still owe $20 trillion, but if hyperinflation reduces the value of the dollar by 50% compared to what it is right now, you will effectively have reduced the national debt from $20 trillion to $10
trillion. Which is still too great to be paid, so they will still have to default. So it's going to be both.
Oh, they're going to default. I mean, it's going to, they can't pay this thing. And everybody's, you know, oh, yeah, the emperor, he looks great. Did you see his new cape? Boy, that's slick, baby. I've never seen anything like it. And that's what we keep getting from these people. You know, who was it? I've got an article here from, I'm trying to think. I can't find the article right in front of me, but I'll describe it. Why? It was from Gains and Pains and Capital. All right. And it was, and they were complaining or observing that the people in government, and especially the Federal Reserve, can never warn us. They never see a collapse before it happens.
They can't.
Well, when you say they can't, that's what they claim. They claim they can't see it. They quoted Bernanke on one occasion saying,
we
got it all under control a year before it all blew up.
They can't make the notice.
I know, but do you understand why?
Yeah.
Which is?
We're going to break.
That's not a sufficient reason, Melody. We'll discuss the reason more when we get back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And we were talking about an article from Gains, Pains, and Capital, and that I couldn't find there now, and I have found it. And the headline is Former Central Banker Comes Clean. The bond bubble is about to burst. That's the heading on this thing. And they say there's a strange
Everybody
thing about central banks. Say what?
Everybody knows it.
There's interesting insight here. There's interesting insight and implication in this. It's not exactly news superficially, but when you look a little deeper, I think it's interesting. There's a strange thing about central bankers. When they're working at a central bank, they never see financial problems, even if said problems are both massive and obvious. And what I think, that's what they wrote, but I think what would be more a clearer statement is that they never admit that they see financial problems. Okay? And they give an example. As Fed Chair in 1999, Alan Greenspan claimed it was impossible to know if stocks were in a bubble when the stocks were in their single largest bubble in 100 years. And he still couldn't tell a bubble when he saw one. The next year, however, the market crashed. As Fed Chairman in 2007, Ben Bernanke claimed the subprime mortgage meltdown was contained and the effects would not spill over into economy. The next year, the market crashed and the economy imploded. And this year, Fed Chair Janet Yellen announced that there wouldn't be another financial crisis in our lifetime. And they say, we'll see what happens next year. Right? Now, why is it that our fearless economic leaders can't admit what they see coming? And it's because the whole economic system is based primarily on subjective confidence rather than objective reality. It's because the confidence is a subjective concept. And because of that, it can be eroded by statements from people in positions of power who warn of impending economic doom. All right? If you've got a corporation that's valued at a certain price, $100 a share of stock, based on how many people it has for employees and what the demand is for their product and how many engine blocks they can make in a day and how many automobiles they can make in a day. All right, we have some objective reality. That corporation has value. I mean, I understand a little bit some rumors can make it go up or down, but it has an objective reality that anchors the price to some degree. But when we have a system that's based on debt, which is promises to pay, and the whole system depends on our confidence in our ability to pay our debts, and we can't. Right? It's all about confidence. And the Federal Reserve has admitted as much. This isn't an offhand, this isn't a bizarre admission or a claim by someone like myself. The Federal Reserve said the whole system is based on the public's faith and confidence in the currency. Huh? Thus, if our economic growth, if the grows tell us of an impending decline, the truth could trigger a self-fulfilling prophecy that helps cause and or accelerate the economic decline. Therefore, our economic gurus can never really dare to give the public a concise, viable warning that even an approaching disaster is coming. Instead, they must constantly pump sunshine and sing sweet lullabies about happy days are here again. And there's a point and an implication.
They can't. They're not going to announce anything to create panic.
They can't because
panic.
They might make it happen.
They're hoping it won't happen. They can't create panic.
Well,
and that's why they'll never know. They're not going to have, like, I had a warning a tornado was coming and I could prepare. They're not going to do that. They never have, though, Al. They never have.
Well, I got that. But and this is the point. So long as our economic system is more subjective than objective, you will never get an adequate warning of what's coming and when it's likely to happen from the government end or the Federal Reserve. And there's an implication here. If you're waiting for an official warning before you prepare, say, well, I'll wait. Donald Trump will tell us, you know, 6 months or a year before the crash or 90 days or at least a month. I mean, I'd expect to get at least a month. No, you're not going to get a warning out of the government. You will not get an effective warning from the Federal Reserve. They're going to continue to pump sunshine until this ship is sinking under the waves. All right? And what that means is that if you're waiting for their warning before you begin to prepare, you will almost certainly be too late with your preparations. You won't really start until the crash really begins, and by then it may be too late. If you want to protect yourself from possible economic declines, it will be up to you to figure out who, if anyone, you can trust for guidance. And it will be ultimately up to you to figure out whatever kind it is that you must do to protect yourself and your family from what may be an oncoming economic calamity. Government's not here to help you when it comes to economic crashes. They're not going to warn you. They never do. They never will. They can't. They can't, because if they're wrong, they could trigger a crash. Later on, people say, if you just kept your mouth shut, we wouldn't have had that collapse. All right? They don't want that. So they're not going to say anything. So it's up to you to figure it out, and you can't wait on the government's official warning, because it'll be after the fact. Words to the wise.
Unfortunately, what people wait for is signs, and one of the signs is a pullback in the record markets. And what always happens... I was talking to somebody just today or yesterday about it. You know, you get to a record high, think it's going to go. Everybody always thinks it's going to go higher. It pulls back a little bit. Oh, well, it's just people taking some profits, so I'm just going to hang in there because it's going higher because my stockbroker is telling me it's going to go higher. The next thing you know, you have another little correction and you don't sell, and then you just wait because it's always going higher. And the next thing you know, you're broke or close to it. Most people probably wouldn't sell until it corrected at least 50%, because then they eventually know that, well, you know what, maybe it isn't coming back, and I should have gotten out. Yeah, I mean, people always believe something is going to go higher. It's just human nature. This is what we believe. It's always going to be better. It's always going to go higher. This is the mantra that's fed to us from Wall Street, from financial planners. Oh, hey, this time it's different. The Dow's going to 30,000. Hey, it might. But why? So if it corrects down to 18,000, I'll guarantee you people are still thinking that it's going to go back to 30,000. But it won't. Not this time. Because it was only the Federal Reserve that has allowed these markets to do what they've done.
So, an article from... which one am I going to pick out of this? I had it here right in front of me, and now I've... there we go. Short article. Shades of 2008. United Kingdom and United States saving rate plunges. Debt comes full circle. This is from Ms. Shedlock. This is Albert Edwards at Societe Generale says, January 2008 is here again. UK and US household debt excess comes full cycle. The very recent data confirms slumping household savings ratios in both the US and the United Kingdom. This was last seen in 2007, just before the bursting debt bubble blew the global economy and financial system to smithereens. The US has just this week seen a substantial downward revisions in its household savings ratio. Some 1.5% has been lopped off recent estimates, taking the savings ratio down from a respectable 5.5% to just 3.5%, levels seen just before the last recession. Now, they're talking about the savings rate, people saving 5.5% of their income. Now they've trimmed it to 3.8%, and they're saying the savings ratio is significant, and they're saying the savings ratio of 5.5% was respectable. savings rate, according to an article we read yesterday from the South China Post or whatever, it says that the average Chinese savings rate is 50%. Right? We talk about a respectable 5.5%. I don't think we're close to a truly respectable savings rate in this country. But it says the Bureau of Economic Analysis has this week undertaken some revisions in the U.S. savings rate, or ratio. The new data shows that the U.S. savings ratio actually declined from 6% to 4% through 2016 and undoubtedly stopped the U.S. economy from sliding into recession in the second half of last year, as real household incomes suffered a severe squeeze due to the headline CPI inflation. What I'm getting to, they are claiming we would have gone into a recession in the second half of last year. We'd have been there, except that our savings rates went down, which meant people were digging into their what would otherwise have been their savings in order to buy their way through the potential recession.
Let me tell
I'm
you
something. I'm curious, Melody. Do you think we were really on the verge of a recession in the second half of last year?
Well, we've never came out of the one since 1987. So, but another point to this is back in April of 2008, consumers had a collective $1.02 trillion in outstanding credit revolving credit. They surpassed that Monday. And the number was released by the Federal Reserve that Americans had $1.021 trillion in outstanding revolving credit as of June of 2017. The revolving credit has been growing at an annual growth rate of almost 5%. And consumers are getting access to credit cards backed by major banks, and a lot of these are subprime. Since the Great Recession, lenders are giving more consumers with subprime, below average credit scores access to credit cards. They might be giving them a little bit lower spending limits, but yet you're having a lot more revolving credit, and now we're matching the credit of these revolving credit as we've had back in April of 2008. So in addition to the lack of savings and digging into their savings, they're also going deeper in debt. Now, maybe, you know, maybe it's a different group. Maybe it's, you know, maybe they're digging in their savings to pay their credit cards or, you know, whatever. Maybe they went through their savings and now they're going into and getting credit cards. But you're having a double whammy here.
It means that we can't pay our bills on based on our income.
What it means is people don't have any money.
No, same thing.
We're 70%.
We're not earning enough to pay our
economy.
Bills.
We're 70% consuming, consumer economy. They need people to spend. They need people to buy.
And the only way you can do it is by going deeper into debt. Well, I won't say the only way, but
wages aren't
significantly
going up. I mean, you don't have to. If you had a good job and you had great wages, you wouldn't have to go into debt. But the point is there's no good jobs, there's no good wages for people enough to, so they have to go into debt. They have to go into debt. They have to use their savings in order to pay for their everyday expenses, their living expenses.
What's going to happen? They're going to default.
Absolutely.
They can't pay their bills right now. They're going into more debt so they can pay the bills right now. If you already can't pay your bills based on your income, it's virtually certain that your ability to borrow money may be convenient and helpful and, you know, a wonderful thing at the moment, but it still points to a time where unless you get very lucky and you get a job that generates a lot of additional cash, you're not going to be able to pay the bill back on the credit cards.
I think these
there's
big corporate
there's a default in your future, and the implication is a major default, a string of defaults across the country.
I think these big announcements of these corporations are building campuses and building these big manufacturing plants and so forth, where most of them aren't going to, you know, come online till 2020 or 2021 or something like that. I think they're betting on the economy dropping. I think they're betting on the collapse of the United States, because then they can bring in, they can start, they could have their factories all ready to go for, you know, because then people will work for anything, so they'll be able to get cheaper labor.
Yeah, but who will buy the product?
Well, eventually,
I mean, you can't build a factory if you think there's going to be a depression. There's going to be a reduced demand.
It depends on how long we're in this. You know, how long, how many years does it take? But I wouldn't, I'd bet on that's what they're doing. Not only, they're also doing a little, you know, building, image building, but in the meantime, that could be one of the reasons. I'm just saying that could be one of the reasons. I mean, you don't need, hey, there's going to be a certain percentage of people that will preserve their purchasing power if they're smart enough. Yeah. If they're smart enough, there's still people with money. Not everybody goes broke. It's only those
people
who don't care.
It's
only
not
those
money,
who don't
savings.
Protect. It's only those that don't protect what they save that will. But people will still have money. That's why people say, well, gee, why should I buy $20 gold pieces? Who's going to buy them? Hello? Not everybody goes broke. There's still money if they protect it. And
but
they will be scrambling.
They will be scrambling
to buy $20 gold pieces when they know that they're losing purchasing power on a second-to-second basis. So, you know, these arguments that these people give you, the why you shouldn't buy $20 gold pieces, it just amazes me. But these people are not in the gold business. You know, they want to sell you paper. And I wanted to talk, we wanted to get to cryptocurrencies today. We'll have to do that maybe tomorrow. Because the price of
cryptocurrency sounds
Bitcoin.
Like a character out of a Superman comic book.
No, it does. It really does.
I know they had a dog Superman. Named Crypto. I think they probably have currencies in Superman comic books named Crypto also. And but don't put any kryptonite around them, because if you put kryptonite around the cryptocurrencies, they turn into fiat dollars. Very dangerous, Melody. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day, I pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my